Not only is resistance futile, but it can be fatal. The Borg were right. Resistance is futile. While the Borg were a fictional enemy of the crew of the Starship Enterprise in this TV series, Star Trek, and the captain of that starship was Jean-Luc Picard, the sentiment, resistance is futile, is not fictional. Many of the ailments that human beings suffer from are due to resistance that go beyond the normal threshold of what we would consider to be normal resistance. I believe the main problem with resistance is that if it's negatively motivated, then we add energy to whatever it is we're resisting. I say, we feed what we fight. So if we're negatively resisting something, we're actually adding energy to the power of the thing that we're trying to battle. In two recent presidential elections in the United States, tremendous resistance built up over George W. Bush and Donald Trump. The resistors fed energy into both of those campaigns, resisting them, which created a tremendous amount of advertising for both of them, and they both got elected. The attention was not on the other candidates. It was on what everybody wanted to resist, and it made them stronger. Of course, a certain amount of resistance, especially if we manage it, can be beneficial. I go to the gym several times a week to work out with weights. The weights provide resistance. The goal in this process is to have my muscles respond to the resistance and grow stronger in order to be able to handle the weights that I regularly increase. I put a demand on my body, and my body will respond to that demand by making me stronger or healthier or more fit. And that's the purpose of using exercise. And frankly, it's the purpose of a lot of activities. We are trying to induce ourselves and our bodies and our minds to grow. Years ago, I had a recurrent dream. Started, I don't know, when I was young, maybe before I was a teenager. And it continued until about 5 years ago. And this was the image. There was a huge amphitheater, like a coliseum, and the base of it was sand. And the coliseum was empty except for two people. One was a person in a white robe, and on the other side of the arena was a person in a black robe. I had a sense that this was kind of from a lifetime in Egypt. That's what it seemed to feel like. And I identified personally with the guy in the white robe, almost like a priest. And what was happening in this dream is these two beings, these two people, were creating thought forms that were flying above the arena. And they were dragon-type creatures flying and attacking one another. So instead of a game in an arena where the teams are on the field, the game was, and maybe it wasn't really a game, but the game was these two thought forms were battling for dominance in the air above the arena. At one point, the priest in the black, his thought form started to become stronger than my thought form, and I started to get angry and started to resist. And as I did that, my thought form got weaker and weaker. And then I realized what I was doing. I was lowering my vibration and then lowering the vibration of my thought form. And as soon as I recognized what I was doing, I shifted and lightened up, enlivened myself and my own thought form. And now my thought form was the most powerful. And it made the thought form of the priest in the black robe go away. I saw this for years as basically a battle of good and evil, the thought forms of a good guy battling the thought forms of a bad guy. But ultimately, I realized this. Both of those characters, the one in the white and the one in the black, were me. It was just two fragments of the same being. And what I recognized is, in pretty much any circumstance that I could find myself in, I could choose to elevate my own vibration in order to deal with the situation, or I could lower my vibration in order to deal with the situation. I could choose a darker approach, a more primitive approach, a more brutal approach, maybe a more physical approach to a situation, or I could choose a more enlightened approach. And that fork in the road, then these two beings, became clear to me that in the future, I had that choice, how to approach something. And you probably are familiar with this idea that in certain situations, you can take the high road or you can take the low road. And that is essentially what this dream was about. Both roads were available to me and, I think, to you. And resisting is to choose a low road, and it's not to our advantage. William Shakespeare said, "Nothing is either good or bad, but thinking makes it so." I agree with that to a certain extent, but I would modify Shakespeare's statement. It's only about 400 some years old and tremendously wise, but I would say, nothing is either good or bad, but thinking and feeling and saying makes it so. Bruce Lipton, PhD, author of Biology Belief, which is a terrific book, talking about how our perceptions activate our genes. Our genes are not the boss of us, but in fact, our perceptions make things happen. Our perceptions create our reality. That means that if we perceive the resistance of the weights in the gym as being our allies in our quest to become fit and stronger and healthier, it is likely that our bodies are going to respond to that and we will achieve our goals. If, on the other hand, we perceive going to the gym as a hardship, a waste of time and energy that won't produce results, it is likely that we will prove ourselves to be right. Thinking, feeling, and speaking create. If we've been programmed to perceive the glass as half empty, we will perceive the glass as half empty unless we change our programming. Creating what we really need and want will make us happier, healthier, and safer. Resisting what we don't want doesn't necessarily make us happier, healthier, or safer. Ask yourself. What do I really want? What do I really want? That's a good first question. If you listen, if you wait for the answer to arrive, if you wait to receive the awareness, that answer will come. Then ask, what is my best next action? It's easy to get stuck focusing on what we don't want. Our emotions get triggered, and the issue, whatever it is that we're resisting, is so obvious that we have trouble taking our attention off of it and putting it on something more abstract, less solid, and that would be what we want. We can't really see or touch or taste or feel what we want, so it's out there. It may be a little bit nebulous, whereas the problem we're experiencing seems so clear, so in our face. We resist a lot of things and situations. For example, we resist being controlled. We resist gravity, discomfort, risks. We resist death. We resist inconvenience. We resist not having. We resist domination. We resist pain, the unknown, change, uncertainty, inertia. We resist complexity. We resist not knowing, threats, danger. We resist criticism. We resist emotional or physical attacks. We resist failing to come in first in the race of life. We resist not taking the best for ourselves. We resist our beliefs, and we resist our imaginings. And we resist bad feelings about ourselves. And that list could go on and on. One thing that can complicate our lives with regard to resistance is the belief that we, as individuals, we have to do the resisting. Even though there's plenty of evidence that divine consciousness has provided for our protection, we think we have to do it. That's the ego influencing us. It's all about us, and we have to do it. And if we don't do it to the ego satisfaction, we end up beating ourselves up. Self-flagellation, scolding, berating ourselves. If you look at your immune system, you'd say, I didn't do that. I didn't design that. It was designed. That's part of the protection. It's like, oh, I'm protected. And our skin and our hair and our eyelashes and a lot of other things. It's like, we didn't do it. We didn't think that up. It was designed by divine consciousness. But when our ego takes over, protecting us from criticism, emotional or physical attack, we can end up in a prison of fear. Our world becomes smaller and smaller and smaller due to its becoming more and more and more dangerous. And who's providing this information to us? Who is doing this perception? Who is feeding us this kind of stuff in our self-talk? The ego. Here's an example. Procrastination. I think procrastination is an effect of resistance in which we imagine negatives so powerful that we can't move forward to accomplish the task. We imagine and anticipate bad feelings about ourselves, so we avoid action. And if we looked at the procrastination that is occurring and go, let me see, is this true? And all of a sudden, we start to loosen the grip that fear has on us, and we resist less. In a recent conversation with a friend, she said this about herself. I am willing to be willing. I love that statement. As soon as she said it, I said, oh, that's a great statement. That's a wonderful antidote to resistance. That would be a great mantra. When you're faced with a situation, I am willing to be willing. Growth is easier when we're willing. Otherwise, we're holding back. Just think of that word, willing. It can mean several significant things. Willing can mean, I agree to go along. I agree to go along. Willing as a verb can mean, I am using my will for a specific purpose, such as, I am willing myself to have a good time today. I am willing myself to go to the gym tomorrow morning. I am willing myself to walk 4 miles tonight. And of course, for old people who think of dying, they could be saying to their children and grandchildren, I am willing you my pet turtle, which has a life span of another 90 years, or I'm willing you the silverware. If we deliberately use resistance to build strength, develop skills, or to have fun, and perhaps make a living, cool. But to use resistance for self-protection and defense because we're driven by fears, that's not so cool. Personally, I have a tendency toward resistance. In fact, when I encounter a person who is very agreeable or very accommodating, I can find them annoying. I seem to be looking for a polite game of idea tennis, kind of like a back-and-forth volley of ideas, not necessarily in harmony, but certainly not angry and not uncivil, just bouncing ideas off of one another. Boom, 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 boom. I like the energy of ideas. So playing idea tennis, to me, is a wonderful idea. As I said, or alluded to, the attitude we have during resistance will determine what we are, if we are increasing growth to build strength, or if a sense of vulnerability has been triggered and we go into what Bruce Lipton would call the self-protect mode. He broke it down into two modes: growth mode, which is what we want to be in, or the self-protect mode, where everything is locked down in order to keep from losing energy. Reacting to feelings of vulnerability with defensiveness can lead to a habit in which feelings of vulnerability become the boss of us. Oh, I'm a little vulnerable if going out into a new grocery store. Oh, I'm a little vulnerable driving on a road I haven't been on before. Oh, I'm feeling a little vulnerable going to a party in which I don't know everyone. Oh, I'm a little vulnerable going into... Yeah, okay. When we feel vulnerable, the walls of defense go up. And if we practice that, those walls not only get thicker and prevent us from going outside of them, but they start to replicate. So one thing was fearful, and now two things are fearful, and then four things are fearful, and then eight things and 12 things, and pretty soon everything is fearful. And people like that end up homebound. I can't go out. I can't make a phone call. I can't. And you go, wow. And you know that didn't all happen at one time. Those fears grew over time, the resistance grew over time, and it seemed like the right thing to do in order to keep safe. But sealing ourselves off prevents us from growing. If we notice the feelings of vulnerability, and they happen, I mean, we're going to have them in a lot of different situations, and it's not a big deal unless feelings dictate everything for us. But if we notice the feelings of vulnerability and the tendency to go into self-protection, we can go, oh, hold on, interrupt that pattern, and lean in the direction of the vulnerability. When fears become the boss of our actions, they grow in power and in the context. So instead of just being afraid in one area, now we're afraid in two areas and so on, as I mentioned a minute ago. It's like, whoa, this stuff is growing and growing and growing. And what happens for people is when they become prisoners of fear, in order to explain this to themselves and they self-justify, it's like, well, the reason I didn't do that, the reason I stayed home to wash the dishes, the reason I wanted to watch the paint dry or my lawn grow, and we pretend that those stories really make sense as to why, instead of leaning into what made us feel vulnerable, we backed away, we avoided, we ran from them. All that justification not to be proactive doesn't serve us. I have done the following, and I have seen other people do the following as well. Cop an attitude instead of doing something productive. Catherine was telling me yesterday about an experience in the classroom. She was a teacher and a supervisor of teachers and a teacher of teachers for years. And she came across somebody who, in a classroom, terribly, terribly resistant, stood up and refused to do whatever exercise she was doing in our English class. And it seems to me that that refusal to go ahead, well, you would call it resistance, and so would I, is based upon a fear. So instead of going, I am scared out of my wits that I'm not going to be able to do this exercise correctly, and, you know, can you help me with that? This student, you know, a youngster in eighth grade, went into resistance to justify not doing this with all kinds of attitude. And you go, that attitude is an electric fence, if you will, electric force field going up, trying to make a person feel safe. It seems really clear to me, having done that plenty of times myself, that copying an attitude is a very common form of resistance to feelings of vulnerability. Instead of, gee, I don't think I can do this, I think I'll cop an attitude instead. Instead of, I don't think I can do this, but I'm going to try. I'm going to try and see what happens. And it is that I am willing to be willing, that slogan, that mantra, could be really helpful to us. So when you feel an attitude in yourself about something, and you can feel it, maybe righteousness or snobbishness or, I don't know, other things like that, you go, hold on. Let me look at myself. What just got triggered? What feelings just became dominant in my field? And we can also, if we deal with other people, which seems pretty logical, we can see attitude in other people's behaviors. And you go, wow, you know what? That attitude is their way of trying to self-protect because they have feelings of vulnerability. And when we know that's true of other people, and we certainly expect it and have experienced it in ourselves, we can be a little bit compassionate. Like, oh, yeah, I've been there, done that. And so instead of copying an attitude about them having an attitude, we can realize exactly what is going on. As we've seen in the United States, people feeling vulnerable just elected a president who told them he would take care of them and eliminate the causes of their vulnerability. And he named Mexicans and Muslims and government and the swamp as the reasons they were feeling vulnerable. They didn't have anything to do with this. Their lack of education or lack of work ethic or small-mindedness or anything else, that wasn't a part of it. It was these outside forces, these external items that were the cause of their vulnerability. He would take care of that. He would drain the swamp in Washington, and he would bring the government under control. And the reality is now becoming obvious, and those voters will now become even more vulnerable to a degradation of public education and defense and the economy even more tilted toward the 1% than it was before. There were three excellent books on vulnerability, stress, and mindset that I highly recommend. Daring Greatly by Brené Brown, and she's got YouTube videos, and it is a wonderful book, and she does a great job of making that stuff come to life. Carol Dweck, D-W-E-C-K. Carol Dweck writes about mindset and the difference between a fixed mindset, which is basically closed-mindedness and self-protect, versus an open growth mindset, which is exactly what it sounds like. If you can grow to learn and become more skilled and better and more aware, you're going to be so much better off. And the third one is by Kelly McGonigal, The Upside of Stress, Why Stress is Good for You and How to Get Good at It. For years, I've been part of a company that talked about stress being nothing but bad. Stress is bad. And, of course, that's not true. Stress is what holds the cells in the body together. Without stress, we would dissolve. It's like, oh, yeah. And without stress of gravity pulling on our body, our bones would become very porous. This was one of the challenges with Russian cosmonauts in outer space, that lack of gravity before they understood it. When these guys came back from space, they couldn't walk. And if they tried to walk, the bones would break. I was like, what happened? It's that lack of stress or gravity on the body caused the bodies to weaken because there was no need to be strong because there was nothing pulling on, no demands on them, kind of the opposite of why I go to the gym. So stress has the potential to be good for us, and guess what changes stress from being harmful to being beneficial. The way we look at it, our perception, our mindset about it. So it's like, oh, stress is bad, stress is bad. Only if you believe stress is bad. Stress is good, stress is good. Yep, if you believe stress is good for you and it makes you stronger. Because I have such a strong belief in the concepts in the book Christ Returns Reveals Startling Truth, based upon what I read and my own experiences, I've been around for a few years, and common sense, I am learning to trust the validity of the prayer in letter 8. And this is how it begins. Father, Mother, Life, you are my life, my constant support, my health, my protection, my perfect fulfillment of every need, and my highest inspiration. Over and over since I began studying the Christ letters, I have witnessed the most wonderful examples of fulfillment of need, just as it was described in the book. Christ says in the book that you will notice that your needs are being fulfilled before you even know you have a need. I go, oh, that'd be kind of cool. And then when that started to happen a few months into my studies, I mentioned it to Mary Ann. I said, hey, I get the answer to a question before I get the question. I get the solution to a problem before I even get the problem, which is delivered some days later. And she said, oh, that's kind of cool. And several weeks later, she said, I am noticing the same thing. I have the solution before I have the problem. I have the answer before I have the question. And we both go, how cool is this? So our needs are being met. We're being supplied with this. And if we can see this, then you go, ah, I get it. I can trust that this is happening. So when something is occurring, you go, ah, I think my needs are being fulfilled. Let me just wait and see. And time again, that turns out to be true. And if we could fully believe that opening line from the prayer, our resistance to that leads to self-protection would decrease because, hey, we would know that we are safer and protected, and these opportunities to grow and to be nurtured and nourished and healed are being presented to us just as we were told in the letters and in this prayer. I want to make this talk maybe more practical for you. Consider this. Notice your reactions to a to-do list that I'm going to ask you to make. So make a list of items that you would like to do today and tomorrow. And when you write 5 or 6 or 10 things on your list, look at the first item and maybe guess or feel, or if you know how to muscle test how willing you are to engage with that item. So I'm a fan of using 0 to 10, 10 being most. In this case, 10 would be the most willing to engage with that item and do it. So now you look at that item and judge 0 to 10 how willing you are. And if you want, you can go on to the next one and do the same thing with the next item and the next item and the next time. But this is what happens. With a little teeny bit of practice, you're going to recognize that your body is sending off feelings, maybe in your tummy, that when you look at something, and you go, oh, I felt that in my tummy. And what is that? My willingness is like a 2 or a 3 or something, a very limited willingness. Now, on, I'll say 0 to 10, you can see willingness on the up by 10 and resistance and unwillingness down by 0. And you'd go, I want to be more willing. If I said to you, you're going to drive the car to the grocery store today, but I want you to keep your foot on the brake, but only, say, 50%. So don't slam it on so you can't move at all, but keep your foot on the brake 50% as you drive the car to the gas station. You go, well, that can't be good for the vehicle. That's not going to work. That's going to be a problem. That's going to be expensive. That's going to cause damage to my vehicle. You go, yep. Just like resistance in our bodies. So if you can feel your resistance and your willingness to doing these items, you go, okay, all right. And I'll bet you'd say, well, you know, it's pretty easy for me to do the things that I rated at 7, 8s, 9s, and 10s. Yeah, no resistance, just boom, boom, all fun, cool, get them done. Yeah, that's great. But the 0s, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, maybe 6, will have resistance and vulnerability attached to them. And if these items are important to you, you say, ah, I really, really have to accomplish them. Going deeper into the self-talk, into the beliefs and images that are attached and are scaring you, will change them. When we engage with what's holding us back, they can release. Communicating with our fears. A lot of people, I don't want to think about that. No, I don't want to talk about that. I don't want to put my attention on that. But communicating with our fears just to acknowledge them reduces their power to control us. And if they are reduced in their power to control us, our resistance will decrease. You just go, hey, I'm free. I'm free from resistance. So I don't need to be resistant. I can create what I want by staying focused on what I want, by releasing the images and the beliefs that have been holding me back. I'd like to end this service with a prayer. This is the pluralized version of the prayer from letter 8 in Christ Returns Reveals Startling Truth. Father, Mother, Life, you are our life, our constant support, our health, our protection, our perfect fulfillment of every need, and our highest inspiration. We ask you to reveal the true reality of yourself to us. We know it is your will that we shall be fully illumined, that we may better receive awareness of your presence within and around us. We believe and know that this is possible. We believe that you protect and maintain us within perfect love. We know that our eventual purpose is to express you. As we speak to you, we know that you are perfectly receptive of us, for you are universal loving intelligence, which has so marvelously designed this world and brought it into visible form. We know that as we ask you to speak to us, we are sending out a consciousness searchlight into your divine consciousness. And as we listen, you will be penetrating our human consciousness and coming ever closer to our increasingly receptive minds and hearts. We commit ourselves and our lives into your care. Thank you. It is so. Amen.